Does your heart long to wander? To discover the deep secrets of coral reefs? Explore the wonders of the California coast and island hop from the Galapagos to Madagascar? Feed your wild heart. Travel the world right here in San Francisco at the California Academy of Sciences. Get tickets at calacademy.org. See penguin feedings, puppet shows, and other live programs daily at the Academy.
When it comes to quiet luxury and contemporary elegance, Swiss watchmaker Longines stands out with over 190 years of crafting fine timepieces for dress, sport, and adventure. Throughout its history, women of distinction, including aviation pioneer Amelia Earhart, Academy Award winner Jennifer Lawrence, and alpine skier Michaela Schifrin, have relied on Longines for their timekeeping needs. One of Longines' most sought-after models, the Mini Dolce Vita, continues this tradition as an icon of the Art Deco era, blending elegance and functionality. The collection is a modern extension of the original Dolce Vita, inspired by a Longines legend from 1927. You can choose the classic stainless steel case or opt for the eye-catching diamond bezel. So, if you're looking for that perfect gift for a special someone or treating yourself this holiday season, visit Topper Jewelers to explore the full collection of Longines watches for women. Mention this ad for a special surprise that will make your experience memorable.
How'd you like to listen to .NET Rocks with no ads? Easy. Become a patron. For just $5 a month, you get access to a private RSS feed where all the shows have no ads. $20 a month will get you that and a special .NET Rocks patron mug. Sign up now at patreon.dotnetrocks.com.
We're back. .NET Rocks. That's right. 1929. I'm Carl Franklin.
I'm Richard Campbell.
April Yoho is here with us. We'll talk to her in just a minute. But, you know, we're coming into the holiday season, Richard.
Oh, yes.
And I'm wondering, you know, are you going to, you're going to do some geek outs?
Oh, I've been writing my brains out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Have you thought about any toys that you might want?
We just published the toy show on Run As Radio, which is like Christmas for sysadmins. We've done it like 6 years in a row now because wow, sysadmins are impossible to buy for, right?
Yeah, of course.
So it's a Joey Snow and Rick Claus, because having Claus and Snow on a show about Christmas toys just sort of makes sense.
That's just going to be over the top.
Just sort of worked out that way, weirdly enough.
Well, I have a Christmas present for you, my friend.
Uh-oh.
That you are not going to believe.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, you and I are very hard to buy for.
Yeah, without a doubt.
And so Kelly got this gift for me. And I was like, oh yeah, Richard needs one of these. So,
what have you done?
We'll wait and see after the holidays what happened. But first, before we get going, let's roll the crazy music for Better Know a Framework.
Awesome. All right, man, what do you got?
Well, as you know, I do this other podcast with Patrick Hines and Dwayne LaFlotte called Security This Week.
Mm-hmm.
And we basically talk about security issues, but through the lens of current events with a whole bunch of dad jokes thrown in there. So we laugh a lot, but you know, you have to sort of spice up this content because it's very dull.
It can be.
Security can be very dry.
And when it's not dull, it's terrifying, right? Like that's sort of your choices.
Yeah. Yeah. And terrifying it is. And so, you know, we have to laugh and that's why. But anyway, we decided to open a Discord channel. And it has become very popular. Not only are people asking questions and interacting and stuff and giving us suggestions for stories, but they're also learning a lot from Patrick and Dwayne. Like they're going to be doing sort of training in Discord that you couldn't get anywhere else. You know, so these guys are just like real pros. So I wanted to give you the Discord channel, this being episode 1929. If you go to 1929.pwop.me, that'll bring you to the Discord channel for Security This Week. And you should you know, if you're interested in security, this is a good thing to do. It's a good community.
Absolutely. Cool, man.
And it being 1929, we can't talk about that year without touching on the Wall Street crash.
Yeah, that was a big one.
That was a big thing in 1929. What was your favorite event?
It was also the first time a Zeppelin flew around the world.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Bad timing, you know. They finally build a machine that'll fly you all the way around the world. And then, I mean, the stock market crash was bad. It was a 12% drop.
Yeah.
But, you know, they call that the trigger of the Great Depression.
Yep.
Mostly because they had a tough time figuring out what to do after that.
There really wasn't enough money in the system to support that kind of drop, right?
Yep. And it had a little cascading event.
Yeah.
Good fun. 1929.
Right. Good fun. All right. Who's talking to us today, Richard?
Grab a comment off of show 1865, the one we did with our friend April back in September of 23. So a little mm-hmm. over a year ago, we were talking about Azure and GitHub. And our friend Mark Wansel had this comment. He said, I always love listening to April talk about DevOps. And now the talk is moving away from DevOps and towards platform engineering, which might be an interesting .NET Rocks type of episode. Maybe. I definitely do platform engineering on Run As Radio. A few years ago, Spotify donated a tool called Backstage, it's at backstage.io, to the Cloud Native Foundation, which builds developer portals. So this whole idea of being able to provide cloud resources to developers, sort of self-service with governance. While this looks promising from a corporate standards point of view, I wonder if the balance of power moves too much in favor of ops and away from developer agility. Always interesting times. I don't know, Mark. Giving smart developers don't want administrator passwords because then it could be their fault.
Yep.
Right. The whole point about the portal approach is that if you do harm with what you instantiate through the portal, that's on the people who organize the portal, not on you. You have or should be living within constraints.
Yep.
So, you know, you should push back on what you're capable of doing if it's actually an impediment. But creating these sort of guardrails so that you control costs, like you limit the number of dumb things that happen. They're really important. And you know, you don't want to find out at the end of the month you accidentally spent $100,000 because you lit some stuff up and forgot to turn it off. That shouldn't be possible through these portals. So, you know, save yourself some pain. Use the portal and push on it what doesn't do the job.
Good advice, Richard.
Not that I have strong opinions about these things.
Yeah.
So, Mark, thank you so much for your comment. And a copy of Music Code By is on its way to you. And if you'd like a copy of Music Code By, write a comment on the website at .NETRocks.com or on the Facebooks. We publish every show there. And if you comment there and I read it on the show, we'll send you a copy of Music Code By.
And you can further contact us on a variety of social media platforms other than Facebook. We've both been on X Twitter for a number of years. That's what I'm calling it now, X Twitter. It seems like it's everybody's X now. It
used to be Twitter.
But we're also on Blue Sky, of course. I'm Carl Franklin, BSky.
That's social.
And that's social. And you're Rich Campbell.
And I'm Rich Campbell, BSky.social.
Yeah. And also on Mastodon. I'm Carl Franklin at TechHub.social.
And I'm Rich Campbell at Mastodon.social.
There you go. So get in touch with us one way or another for any reason. But if you ask a question or have a comment and Richard reads it, we'll send you a copy of Music to Code By.
For sure. And by the way, I did put out on what for on the X and the Blue Skies and the Threads and the Mastodons that I was working on the Geek Outs last weekend. And guess which one I got the most feedback on?
I'm thinking Blue Sky.
It's Blue Sky. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm getting more engagement there than anywhere else, too.
I got feedback on all of them, to be honest. So I'm very flattered. Like, that was nice. People love the Geek Out. So I got a long list of things. When we actually publish them, you'll hear. I'm going to mention your name if you asked a question.
Very cool.
Yeah, it was the Blue Sky response was swift and thorough.
Excellent. All right. So let's bring back to .NET Rocks, April Yoho. So she is a senior developer advocate and DevOps practice lead at GitHub, specializing in application transformation and DevOps ways of working. Her focus is to take customers on a journey from legacy technology to serverless and containers, where code comes first, while enabling them to take full advantage of DevOps practices. In her spare time, April spends time outdoors hiking, skiing, or scuba diving. That's where her your nickname comes from that you got when you were 9, right? And you're also a triathlete competing in Ironman and half Ironman triathlons. So if I could sum it up, don't f*** with her.
No.
She'll kick your ass.
Nice.
Welcome back, April.
Thank you, Carl. I think that's the best TLDR intro I've ever had in my entire life.
Very cool, huh? Four words. That's all you need to know.
Got right down Love to it. That's too funny. How you doing? You've been adventuring.
Yeah, how you doing? What's going on?
I'm good. I've been traveling around the world for work. Some pleasure, a little bit of pleasure here and there, but mostly just traveling around the world, going to customer events, first party events. We just had GitHub Universe. Yeah. What was that? Month and a half ago. Mm-hmm. GitHub Constellation in South Africa, GitHub Constellation in India. Yeah, it's been busy. And then we just had Ignite. What was that? Last week in Chicago. So I've been a busy bee.
Yeah. I got a little story for you. So I'm working with a customer and we started out with a big GitHub repo and everything's working great. And then they say, yeah, we're going to move over to Azure DevOps. And I'm like, why? And they say, well, a lot of our other products are over there and the customers and, you know, and this and that, they want us to move. So we tried to move and it was painful. Like, oh, I didn't know I could add a new file to my project and that, you know, the source control just wouldn't pick it up. What? I added it to and I synced and everything. It's just not there. And when we had to configure it, like by default, you have to configure it so that you can do that. So now we're moving all the way back to GitHub because screw that.
Yeah, I don't know why you would have left.
It wasn't my decision.
Well, you know, sometimes we have to learn by our mistakes, Carl. We all grow up, right?
Yeah, yeah. Well, just to say, it wasn't my decision. And I'm the one that pushed them towards GitHub in the first place because that's my home base.
Sure.
Well,
so we know welcome how the back. Workflows work.
Mm-hmm. Well, welcome back.
Thank you.
We love having you on GitHub.
It's all about the action.
Oh, I have plenty of repos on GitHub. It's just through this one customer.
Yes, you do.
But what's new in GitHub in 2025?
What is new? Well, it's been the year of AI. If you haven't heard. AI is everywhere. Yeah. Absolutely everywhere. So at Universe, we made quite a few announcements. Do you want me to run through them?
Yeah, please.
Sure.
Sure. So I think actually probably the good headline of AI, there's a couple things I think are good headlines. One is AI is really end-to-end with you on GitHub now. Mm-hmm. We're really building it into the start of an issue, even in discussions, into your pull requests, before your pull requests even, in your IDEs, and then all the way through to remediation. So we're really seeing a full DevOps lifecycle with AI end-to-end. Not just with Copilot Workspace, but Copilot Chat and having GitHub Copilot with you wherever you go. That's been pretty cool. The big thing that people have also shouted about is having the option of different models. So we've done a lot with multi-modality, multi-models, however we call it these days. There's a big fancy term.
Because your original was OpenAI.
Right. The original was OpenAI, and we still have that in place, but we've moved away from that to different models. So we announced about four or five other models plus actual GitHub model site as well. So you can choose your model, you can play with it, you can have a look and go, right, what works, what doesn't work, how does it respond? And people really want the choice. So you can go shopping for models now when you're writing your code.
Right. I'm just surprised that they care. Like, does it really make that much of a difference?
It does. And you know, it's actually funny you say that. I wrote an article for the .NET blog at Microsoft several months ago when GitHub models got released. And they're like, yeah, we want to showcase the GitHub models features and functionality in .NET. I said, okay, great. It wasn't there. So you could do it in C#, Python, or JavaScript. And they did release capability in C#. And yeah, it made a huge difference. And actually, if you go into GitHub Copilot now and say, what is the best model to use for C#, or, you know, even testing or whatever, it will give you three or four different options. Wow. And I've gone into the GitHub models playground and started playing with the different models and seeing what the outputs are like. It's a ton of fun. But yeah, it'll definitely differ on type of language you're using. If you're whether using infrastructure as code, you know, anything C# related or Golang, Python, et cetera, the models are all different. You want to use different models for visualization. Absolutely.
One of my favorite features of large language models is its ability to remember what we've talked about, right?
The context.
What we've done, the context. And I'm wondering if you have to switch models for different parts of your application, do they share the context or does each of them have their own context?
You know, I haven't, because we've just released it and a lot of it's in preview, I haven't dived deep enough to really answer that. So what I've done with the models is taken the same task and compared like for like. If I ask it to write X unit tests in my C# code, One model is going to defer from another one. Whereas if I say, write some X unit tests, or if I give another model the task of make my C# code more secure, it's going to give me a completely different answer. So I like doing like for like comparison. Same thing when we compare the usability of AI to a human. If it takes me 5 hours to write a unit test, hypothetically, how long does it take with Copilot? 5 minutes or less.
You guys are the ones that coined the term Copilot, but you know, clearly you're using it differently now. Like, why are there I get multiple models because there's difference between them, but why are there multiple Copilots? Like, you already talked about Copilot Workspace, Copilot Chat.
Yeah. So let's back this up. So there's GitHub Copilot, which is the original Copilot. Mm-hmm. And then we started increasing features and functionality in it. So with that, we started, well, we being GitHub, not me, I have nothing to do with branding, started differentiating the types of use cases for Copilot. So Copilot Chat, because you can chat with it, you can have conversation with it in your editor, in your IDE. Then we started looking at Copilot Workspace, which is an end-to-end driven thing. I have no idea how they name these things, but we've basically tacked on another differentiator in Copilot in its different use cases. And then Microsoft took Copilot and put it on everything and rebranded 365 recently to Copilot again.
Well, sometimes it's 365 Copilot and sometimes it's Copilot for 365, but
let's take this back to the naming convention at Microsoft and the marketing folks. Like, you had Team Foundation Server, you had Azure DevOps. Like, the naming conventions, the branding, I'm not going to comment on. It is tough. It's hard. There's a lot of products. I get it.
I imagine they like hire a new executive and they come in the first thing and say, okay, we're going to change the names of these things. Who's with me? And then he's like,
let's change the icons and the names. Let's confuse everyone. Because I like the pictures. I like knowing, what does the picture look like? What's the icon that I'm looking for that day? And then when they change it, I'm lost.
Yeah.
Right.
I'm very lost.
Yeah, you can change the name all you want, but if you change the icon, we're doomed.
Yeah.
Exactly. Exactly.
Name, we're not going to worry about. It's going to be fine. Okay. Yeah. So, I mean, that's three different quote unquote co-pilots, right? But I guess they just arrive at different places for you.
Yeah. They have different features and functionality. So the Copilot Chat is the chat in your IDE. So whether you're in VS Code or
this is your rubber duck.
This is your rubber duck, 1000%. And they're all your rubber ducks, actually. But this is chat. This is conversational, giving it the context. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, this is what I probably use 99.9% of my time doing. Is chat. So I open up my IDE. I ask it about my code base, how to fix my code. Let's fix some legacy code, convert code from C# to JavaScript. If you're feeling feisty that day, you know, you could do whatever you want.
Yeah, would have gone to Ruby on Rails, but whatever. You know.
Well, hey, you know, to each their own.
Who are you? What have you done with my friend Richard Campbell?
I just remember that guy sitting in the corner whenever we were battling on a problem like this. You know, if we did this Ruby on Rails, it would have been fine. It's like, yeah, we would have gone away for 6 months and then what?
That was Ruby Buddha, wasn't it?
Probably.
Yeah. He was like, I have the answer. Ruby on Rails. Every problem.
Every problem is solved with Ruby on Rails.
It's kind of like how Kubernetes solves everything. It's either Ruby on Rails for code and Kubernetes for everything else.
You know, the best way to know it's not a solved problem is just to look at how many products have the word Kubernetes in them. Correct. If it was a solved problem, there'd be one. Exactly. There's not. There's dozens. So, okay.
There's more than that now.
Yeah, but I feel the same way about the Copilots. Like, we're still feeling around for the perfect interface. Like, I appreciate your view on chat. That's just this idea of, this is where I come in to a project I haven't touched in 3 months. And I start with chat saying, okay, what the hell was I thinking? And just that it can start presenting some information about this code base.
And it's there to chat. It's there to conversationalize. I think with the new models is too, it's skewed the lines quite a bit. So Copilot Chat was very much iteration and context. And then with the new models, you can give it full sentences and paragraphs. And you can go from, you know, the slash explain command, the slash test command, slash help to how do I execute this class? And explain it to me in Dutch, and it will.
Yeah.
It's pretty fantastic. That's been my new party trick, is every country I've visited, I've spoken to Copilot in whatever native language I'm in. So that's been exciting, because you never know how it's going to respond. And it's been really good. It's been spot on.
Do you speak Dutch?
A little bit, but I'm better in German. And please, let's not test that. It's the end of my day today. My brain cells have stopped working.
Yeah, that's not nice.
No,
that's not nice, Carl. I think Richard's seen me or heard me speak Dutch before in real life, potentially. Yeah.
when we've been out and about.
What's Dutch for beer?
Beer.
Yeah,
German's beer, Dutch is beer.
Okay.
They're hard languages to learn at the same time because they sound similar but are pronounced very differently.
That's usually where you start, though, right? Because
beer. Danke.
Whiskey.
Also bleed.
Yeah.
All right. Now that I've completely derailed the conversation, let's get back to GitHub.
Nice. Now, is Copilot Chat really for Studio Code or Studio, or does that matter?
So all the new features are coming out in Visual Studio Code. Why? It is the flagship product at Microsoft, and the VS Code team is hot on this, and it's also the most widely used IDE. Now, for all the .NET community, they're going to say, well, what about us in Visual Studio? There is development in there.
Yeah. I'm going to grab onto that hole. Did you just call Visual Studio Code, the code editor, an IDE? Is that what you said?
I don't know.
That's what she said.
Probably. Maybe.
Yeah. And also the flagship IDE. So I thought flagship didn't mean most popular, but original.
Or largest.
Largest or whatever.
Can we totally erase all that and start again?
No. That's all right. You know what we could define flagship as? Biggest on disk. You know, that it is. Visual Studio.
It's definitely our leader in IDE technologies out in the world. And the VS Code team is hot on it. They're very good at developing the extension. So the Visual Studio team develops a lot of the extensions for Visual Studio. And then for IntelliJ and all of those products, those folks are responsible for the engineering behind that. So we give them access to the APIs to do what they need to do. But it's on them to develop it. But yeah, VS Code is one of the most popular IDEs and it's open source.
Yep.
So there's lots of great things to say about it. But yes, you get every .NET developer that's like, well, what about Visual Studio? And I'm like, it's there. Yeah. I'll be honest, I haven't done a demo in Visual Studio in a while.
Mm-hmm.
It's been a long time. It's a heavyweight application on my machine. And most of the time I'm using a GitHub Codespace, which is VS Code in the cloud in a secure environment. So selfishly,
I don't know how many new users are coming to Visual Studio, but I know there's a lot of existing users in the Visual Studio space. And it's this is recognition that it's as much a project management tool as it is also a coding environment. And so, you don't move away from it easily, certainly. But I do seem to live in both. Certain projects I function in Studio and other projects I function in code.
Absolutely. I think anyone that's working in Visual Studio is crossing over to VS Code a lot. But it's VS Code's an enabler for anyone that is still learning to code.
Mm-hmm.
You have to think of it as, you have university students. They're all mostly university kids are learning Python. They're kids, they're adults, but most kids in school, 8, 9, 10-year-olds are learning Python. People are learning Python for research and data in school. So VS Code is a great enabler as an IDE. And I still have customers that don't use anything other than Notepad++. I don't even want to start that argument.
Too many features in Visual Studio Code, apparently.
Yeah, well, it's not enterprise level, apparently, is what they've said.
And Notepad++ is?
Yes, that was a great argument we had with their security team when, you want to talk about developer productivity, don't let them use Notepad++. They just didn't want to take the time to procure and go through that process of vetting the product. And
a free product.
Yes. And if it, yes.
Yeah. I don't think money was the issue there.
No.
No, it was not
clearly
money.
The learning curve.
Yeah.
Yes.
Or such as that actually is. Mm. But the reality, of course, is that chat shows up in either place. There's plugins for both. Mm. Like wherever you work, these tools are going to come to you.
Yes.
And again, conversations about code, which is really interesting because half the time we're still formulating what the heck we're thinking about our code. And just to rubber duck, it helps.
It is. And the single pane of glass experience that you get in Visual Studio Code is hands down my favorite experience. Mm-hmm. And when I say single pane of glass experience, when you start using the other GitHub extensions like pull requests and actions, you can see all of your automation. With the pull request, you can use the code review feature that we've just released at Universe. So it's part of Copilot. Before you even stage your changes in your IDE, you can use code review with Copilot. Mm-hmm. So that is 100% a rubber duck scenario, or you're a junior developer and want to understand how to write better code. Or you're like me, I live and work somewhere separate from the rest of my team. So I'm working my morning time, 9 a.m., 10 a.m. I can check my own pull request with Copilot. And then you can also check it on stage changes. And then you can do a code review once you've submitted your pull request. So there's kind of three different places. Well, I'd say two, before the pull request and then after the pull request. And that helps improve code quality massively.
Great. Now, I mean, it's still traditional code reviews too, but this sounds like the code review I do before sitting with a senior to go through a review, just like get yourself into shape.
Yeah. And I think it's also a great way to just check yourself, because so often we're rushed. We are frustrated, or it's a context switch. You get pulled out of your IDE into a meeting, or somebody taps on your shoulder, or the dog needs to go out, or you have screaming kids at home, or whatever the scenario is. You get stopped from whatever it is you're doing. You lose your flow, and then, you know, you screw up your code. And honestly, code that you're talking about, any kind of repo you pull up 3 months ago. Why did I write something the way I did 3 months ago?
Yeah.
No idea. Mm-hmm. No clue. Not sure what my brain cells were thinking at that time. So the ability to review what I did before I submitted is great. It also helps me from making just stupid, silly mistakes. The humans are the problems, right?
Yeah.
We like to put passwords in places that shouldn't be there, and we like to push buttons and misspell things and do silly things.
And so the review might catch a few more of those.
It has caught all of mine today.
Well, the name Copilot really applies to that, because that is like having someone looking over your shoulder and say, yeah, you know, before you commit this, you might want to look at these little issues here. Yeah, I like that.
Now, that's separate from the tool that helps write the PR, right? That actually summarizes the pull requests and stuff. Like, that's...
Yes, it's still part of the Copilot licensing, but it's a separate, different step in the development process.
Right. But I just appreciate it. Writes far better pull request statements than I do.
Oh, absolutely. Well, so it thorough. Actually lists out the files for you.
Yeah.
It lists out the files, references them, and summarizes them. And, you know, often I'll put up a pull request out of sheer frustration, be like, please God, work. You know, it's pretty ugly. My commits are really ugly sometimes, but you're rushed. You're frustrated. It's your like 80th attempt at getting this thing to work.
I gotta admit, I've put in commits where the comment was, fixed a few things that didn't work before.
Yeah.
Oh, great.
And then, yeah, finally, and then there's four of those in a row followed by FFS, right? Like,
yes. Please save yes.
me. help. I'm doomed.
Right. Tried this again.
I think the big one is you're often flailing around with a problem and you're just you're fence posting, you're hacking at code in different places. And one of the things I like about that summarizer is it shows me all those, like, why is there a file change in that file? Oh, right. Yeah. When I was flailing at that thing, maybe that change shouldn't stay.
Revert. Yeah. And you know, it's also things like we talk about DevOps, right? And, what's the phrase? Gosh, I wish my brain cells would work tonight. Short-lived feature branches, right? Commit early and often.
Yep.
And that's a good way to make sure you're committing the right size pull request for your features.
Yeah, don't stay over in that branch too long.
Mm-mm. Short-lived
feature branches. But you should branch. Like, don't also just try to
1,000%,
right? So I worked with another developer on this project, and he's working in a totally different space than I'm working on. And, you know, we don't branch. We just... You know,
haven't needed to.
And if you don't need to, don't.
Yeah, I disagree with you, Carl, because what if you screw something up? You're screwing up your single source of truth.
Well, yeah. Well,
there's rollback for that.
You are.
If I screw something up, then it won't build.
Not necessarily your buddy, but
you. Right. But I'm working on my code. He's working on his, and we don't overlap. So if I screw up my code and if I break the build, I'm a jerk. But
what if you bring in a third person?
No, the real problem is when you roll back and so you got to push back his work too.
Mm. Yes.
But then he can.
Haven't had to do that. But you know what, though? It's a very, probably a more rare scenario the way I'm working with this particular.
No, you hit the magic number two.
Yep. Any more than that, we would have to be branching and merging.
Probably.
Definitely.
It's all a question of chance of collision.
We also, you know, text each other, right? So if he's going to make a change, he says, hey, I'm going to make a change. Just hang out for an hour. Oh, okay. No problem. So we avoid merge conflicts like the plague.
Nice.
You know, there's a great GitHub feature for that. merge queues. I'm just saying.
I'm sure.
How to avoid a merge bomb? Use a merge queue.
Well, you know, an SMS is working just fine for the two of us.
It's one kind of merge queue.
Yes. Yes. Have you ever been on a merge train?
Yeah. I took one to New Jersey once from...
So this is before my GitHub days. And actually in GitHub, you can use the merge queue feature. And a lot of our customers absolutely love it because they're like, yeah, we get merge bombs all the time. How do we prevent it? Yeah, look at merge queues. I'm like, oh, this is great. I was actually working in Azure DevOps on a customer project, and we were on a mission as a team to close as many PRs as possible. And we had some merge bomb issues. So we put in a merge train in Azure DevOps, and it was probably the most fun / hysterical / frustrating moment of pull requests going through at once. But yeah, merge bombs are no fun.
So tell me about merge queues.
Well, I think I just summed it up. You can set it up so that you can set up a policy. And
so basically multiple merges can happen in the right order.
Correct. You can prioritize them. Pretty fancy stuff.
Isn't there also ability to sort of detect this might be a collision here, so let's pull it off onto a branch, like, so just a way to,
like, branching policies.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's another feature, Carl.
You know, when I get into my next project that has more than two developers, I would be definitely using this stuff.
Well, you know, I'm going to say something that might rock the boat with people that are out there listening. And I'm going to say this to you, Carl, as my friendly sage advice from my many years doing demos. When we as business, as tech professionals are doing a demo, we should always use best practice. Here's why. Because someone in the audience will do exactly as we did, and it'll be simple. And that's why we like to keep our demos simple. And they will pick up that bad habit. And so often I've been with someone in the industry, it's like, oh, this is just a demo, it doesn't matter. I'm like, well, people are learning from us. It does matter. And I was working on a very simple, it was literally a vanilla website. It was for Microsoft. And someone had put a YAML file at the, they exposed the YAML file externally. And they're like, yeah, can you not put this in your blog? And I'm like, so I had to like kindly call out best practices about calling out that team or that person. But it's those things that are super critical when we're doing demos. Always use best practices, because someone is going to pick up on that. Or someone will go, oh, wow, what's a merge queue? Or, wow, what kind of policies can we put in place? Because a two-person project quickly becomes a three-person, 10-person, and using the, and then, you know, even better, template all your repos. So you don't have to think about this, configure it, create a template so every repository has all the best practices built in, and then you can do better. And then you're showing people to do better, and you're making a difference in this world.
I totally agree.
One pull request at a time.
Yes.
We should break.
Yeah. Let's take a break. We'll be right back after these very important messages. And as a reminder, if you don't want to hear these messages, you can get an ad-free feed by becoming a patron at patreon.dotnetrocks.com. It's only $5 a month. We'll be right back.
Does your heart long to wander? To discover the deep secrets of coral reefs, explore the wonders of the California coast, and island hop from the Galapagos to Madagascar. Feed your wild heart. Travel the world right here in San Francisco at the California Academy of Sciences. Get tickets at calacademy.org. See penguin feedings, puppet shows, and other live programs daily at the Academy.
When it comes to quiet luxury and contemporary elegance, Swiss watchmaker Longines stands out with over 190 years of crafting fine timepieces for dress, sport, and adventure. Throughout its history, women of distinction, including aviation pioneer Amelia Earhart, Academy Award winner Jennifer Lawrence, and alpine skier Michaela Schifrin, have relied on Longines for their timekeeping needs. One of Longines' most sought-after models, the Mini Dolce Vita, continues this tradition as an icon of the Art Deco era, blending elegance and functionality. The collection is a modern extension of the original Dolce Vita, inspired by a Longines legend from 1927. You can choose the classic stainless steel case or opt for the eye-catching diamond bezel. So, if you're looking for that perfect gift for a special someone or treating yourself this holiday season, visit Topper Jewelers to explore the full collection of Longines watches for women. Mention this ad for a special surprise that will make your experience memorable.
And we're back. It's .NET Rocks. I'm Carl Franklin.
And I'm Richard Campbell.
And that's April Yoho. And we're talking GitHub. And went down a little rabbit hole about best practices. And shame on you if you're not using them.
Should we talk about GitHub Spark? Because that was another one of the announcements out of Universe this year, right? This is cool.
We should talk about Spark. Spark is awesome. I did a session yesterday for GitHub Winterfest. And I was showing off the new stuff we announced at Universe. And I was like, oh, I'll build something with Spark. So Spark is very simply, when you go to it now, it's in preview. You explain what you want to do. And again, giving the AI as much context as possible is mm-hmm. ideal. So I actually built two apps without writing one bit of code. So the first app, I wanted to build a Pac-Man game, and I told it what colors I wanted to use, how many levels I wanted to have, and then it spat out something that kind of almost vaguely looked like a Pac-Man game. I could iterate it, and then it spat out a different version, and it was much better. I built another app that just gave me a dashboard of my metrics on GitHub. So actions usage, Copilot usage, and it was really simple, but I literally just told it what I wanted in a paragraph with some detail, and it spat it out in a couple minutes. So it's given people that are non-developers the ability to write applications. That is huge.
I mean, under the hood, it's writing code, right? So yes. I mean, do you have access to that code if you want to learn?
You know, funnily enough, I haven't played that far into it yet, right. But you could, it's pretty much on the surface at the moment. So the aim is you're not a developer or you're not very technical. You could be a teacher or you could be in business somewhere and you need to do a thing and you want a dashboard. Spark will build it for you, hooking it into your repositories. It is really meant to be, I'm not a coding type programmer and I need to do a thing. And it's pretty cool like that.
So it's a no code solution.
Exactly. It goes beyond Power Apps, beyond low code. It is no code. I haven't actually looked to see if you can see the source code. Mm-hmm. I think you can. I think you can modify it. I think. However, because I'm on preview access, I don't know.
Yeah, it's really early days.
I'm literally just playing with it and just learning how to give it the context and give it that example of what I want. And then I go to iterate it. And yeah, it's just fun to spit out games and build stuff without writing any code, just to see what would happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, writing better prompts. And that somehow it's evolved with GitHub models as well. I don't know that we've talked about GitHub models at all.
It is a little bit tied into GitHub models. We haven't gone too far into that publicly in terms of what we're doing. That GitHub models, let's call it a different aspect at the moment. So it is using some model selection on the back end. So you do get to choose mm-hmm. your different models. But it's still really, really limited early doors. Whereas GitHub models gives you, and I want to say 30 some odd models to play with, and you can compare them. And that's a very, very different scenario because you can ask it programming questions. You can ask it almost any technical question, or you can give it some code and it will process it and you can compare two different models next to each other. So like I was talking about the .NET reference earlier, it didn't support .NET initially. It does now. And that is definitely a lot more of a technical solution because you can hook into the API and get access and have a secure area to play with it. Whereas Spark is very much like you're using plain English or plain language to tell the model what you want and it will build it for you.
Okay. But so GitHub models for me almost feels like AI Studio in the sense that this is a place to build generative apps. Spark leans on models for some of that language part, but it's generating different code there. That models is interesting unto its own. I think it's more mature than Spark. Spark's kind of brand new.
Spark is absolutely brand new. Models has been out for several months, and it's more language-based, so you can customize it to the language you work with, whereas Spark is, you know, the two things I...
Pretty much under the
hood. It's all under the hood. You know, I could probably pull up what I built yesterday and have a look at it. I haven't. I just wanted to show I've used plain English and built a thing. Right. I didn't get into the details yet. And to be honest, I haven't really had a chance to play with Spark enough.
It's only been a month.
It's only been a month and, you know, it's only so many hours in the day and so many toys to play with.
Well, and it's one thing to make a Pac-Man game. How does it do with forms over data, right? Like just whipping out a quick...
It pulled some of the data from my repo out and gave me a little dashboard. And I say a little dashboard. It was nice. It gave me some basic metrics and it was pretty cool. But I want to actually play with it and get more of a deep dive into it. I think that's what Christmas is going to be for me, playing with Spark a lot more.
GitHub sweaters and GitHub models. There you go.
Yes. That's
GitHub sweater is done. Awesome.
Yeah.
If you don't know what we're... Thank you. It's the latest from Universe.
If you don't know what we're talking about, go see April's bio on the .NET Rocks website, and there's a picture of her in the GitHub sweater. Christmas sweater.
All right. We have AI'd the snot out of this conversation. Are there other aspects that have been evolving at GitHub? I mean, I once upon a time, it was about source control. Even I can tell it still does that.
Actually, there's two things that I'm excited about. I think the biggest thing, and I would say it's probably bigger than AI in a lot of ways, is we've just released data residency for the EU.
Nice.
That's a huge one. We have more regions that are going to be coming down the pipeline at some point, but the EU has been the most highly requested region to get data residency. One, EU law. Second, here in the UK, we have Brexit issues, as I like to call them. So data residency is a hot topic for us, which has prevented a lot of people from consuming GitHub. Just because what EU contracts are really specific around data residency.
Right.
So it's very much a data protected environment, and it brings in the authentication and EMU process for end user access into that. So it's given people what they wanted. So that's a pretty big step for us.
And with more regions coming. And when you say EU, does that mean, I'm guessing it's like the Azure data center in Ireland, just as a guess.
It'll be Europe. So it will cover off, I don't know how they've actually, well, I kind of know how they've carved up the data, but the Amsterdam region, which is Europe West, is the primary data center region in Azure. And then North Europe is Dublin. It's a secondary one, technically.
Right.
But those are the two major ones. And then there are other countries that have data centers in Azure, but the primary Europe regions are Europe West and Europe
North. So far, yeah. I know that Microsoft went to the trouble of building Germany, a specific one for them.
France and Switzerland, but Switzerland's literally Switzerland on their own. Right. The UK has their own. But yeah, a lot of the countries are getting their own data centers because of residency.
Yeah. Anything to, keep the customers happy. You need the data centers
Absolutely.
Anyway.
Absolutely. I know that in the UK, they've invested millions and millions of pounds to skill up the tech industry here in the UK. And they're doing something similar in the other countries where they put in data centers. There's also a major AI skilling initiative. So the EU data residency thing is a hot topic for us. And for us to release that, that's great. That will just keep evolving over time. And the other thing I've really enjoyed that we released are actions performance metrics. So as a DevOps person, we like observability. We like knowing how to improve things for the next cycle. So it's great we built a thing, but how is it impacting? Is it being utilized? Carl likes to break his build with his buddy over there, but nice. How much compute is he?
Oh,
I mean,
boy,
yeah, okay. We all break builds.
There we go.
I'm just picking on Carl today. It's been a while, so I thought I'd pick on him. But seriously, like if Carl's working on this project with his friend, how much consumption are they using in GitHub Actions? Are they, and often when we are using CI/CD to deploy things, we have very inefficient pipelines. Our tests are running too long or stuff is just, if his buddy has to wait an hour for the pipeline to run, why? Can we get that down to 20 minutes, 15 minutes? So the actions performance measures.
Yeah, analyzing that stuff is a nuisance, right? Like it's not like it isn't doable, but it is kind of go to a log, show what step it was on and how long it spent it. Like you got to do a lot of mining to find that. Well, where were we spending our time?
Well, you did. And actually the new performance metrics makes it easier. So it gives you a dashboard, it gives you some high level metrics, and then you can sift through the data and go, right, well, this one's taking an hour to run. What's our runtime over, an hour? Carl and his buddy can go look at that data and then drill into it. So it's a lot more apparent from the surface, from the 10,000 foot view.
Well, I noticed you blamed testing right off the bat. So that's fair.
Testing does take a while sometimes, it's worth it, but
I'm with you. And definitely was one of the things I put a lot of energy into, splitting a set of web tests across multiple instances so that they ran simultaneously to shorten that cycle down.
Yeah.
But it's not, and that's not trivial to do, but you only do it when we were at a point where it's like it was a weekend and we wanted to get it down to 15 minutes. And we got it down to, the idea was you had enough time to go and get a coffee. And by the time you got back, all of your errors were apparent. Right. Yeah. Well, so that your head was still in the game, right? Like you hadn't started on something else by the time you got the feedback.
Or delay the rest of the team.
That's been a big theme in our discussions if the time between, builds or whatever it is, CI/CD, publishing, is too long, you're thinking about something else and you've moved on.
Yeah. And you know, the classic one, literally, this was strange loop. It was a weekend, right? It's like you did the push on Friday. On Monday, you got the report and you could hand it to anybody because you had no clue. Like at that point, it didn't matter. Anybody had to pick it up again. But yeah, getting it down to 15 minutes was that sort of magic number, but it meant harnessing a lot of hardware. And, you know, the productivity went through the roof because people didn't get off the thread. The remediations were really fast when it was that short. It paid for itself pretty fast.
Absolutely. And I think we see customers consuming a lot of actions. And if you automate the life out of your repository, and not just with CI/CD, but you know, when you open up an issue, it kicks off a bunch of actions, et cetera, and tasks and automation. You have to be efficient with how you utilize them. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, you're not saving any time. And yeah, you do increase your billing. So with any process, observability and reporting is crucial, but it's such a pain in the butt. However, the new performance metrics feature is really cool. So nice. I'm biased because I love actions, but I thought it was a cool feature. So yeah, those are the most notable things. There's been other things around enterprise capability as well. Huge push on enterprise, so not just source control anymore.
Because you don't think of GitHub as an enterprise product, right? It's always been that scrappy upstart open that was source. The happy place for open source to live. Mm-hmm. But let's face it, like there's a few enterprises that use GitHub these days. Mm-hmm. One of them is named Microsoft. Like,
yes, they're not entirely on GitHub. They still use Azure DevOps a bit, but we won't.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, no. But
is GitHub running in Azure?
Well, we have runners in Azure. CodeSpaces sits in Azure, but no, we have stuff in different places. I'm pretty sure we have that documented somewhere. It's not entirely in Azure.
Sure.
It's more complicated than that.
Yeah, that's above my pay grade.
What is the explanation for enterprise cloud? What is that?
What do you mean the explanation? Like why we have it?
Explain yourself.
What is it? I'm thinking a lot of folks that listen to the show have been using GitHub in a very traditional way, the way that it has always been, and maybe haven't. And maybe it's throughout their organization now, but again, it's kind of piecemeal. Like, does enterprise cloud kind of organize things for them? Does it lift that up? Give us a little more governance?
It gives us a lot of governance. There's quite a bit of governance built into the platform. I think the one thing you have to think about when using GitHub, if you've been using Azure DevOps or GitLab, you can't always think of where you've come from. Mm-hmm. So often I'll work with people like, we came from GitLab and I can't find how to do X. So often it's there just in a very different place, in a different way. And that was a big change I had to make when I was working purely with Azure DevOps, was how to do things a little differently. But yeah, we have a huge push on governance and we want our customers to scale, whether they're startups or large enterprises. And there's a huge amount of time and effort. And that's where the EU data residency came in, because our enterprise customers are screaming for it. You know, I don't have the existing stat, but at one point there were over 70,000 enterprise customers using GitHub. That was probably a year and a half ago. So it's probably more now, 80, 90,000 or 100,000 or some insane number. But, you know, enterprises also help drive features, we'll be honest, that help open source projects and help community projects.
Right.
Enterprises can help, put in the requests and they utilize it. And sometimes they're our biggest users of the new features as well to give feedback.
Yeah. Help push you guys forward too. But, absolutely. You know, we've had an ongoing conversation here about enterprises playing well in the open source community. I still feel like it's too hard for an enterprise to even know what open source libraries they're dependent on and how dependent they are on them. Like, I've spent enough time with CFOs, and I've always resisted being one, to know they would write a check a year for this stuff. Just spend it well. What they don't want to do is have 100 requests or 1,000 requests to support different projects. Like, they're not interested in that. And I've never seen a dashboard at an enterprise level that said, given we allocated $10,000 to this, what project should we spend on?
SBOM. Mm-hmm. Dependency graph.
Yeah.
I mean, I still feel like SBOM.
You need a graph. You need to see that.
Be better at SBOMs.
You know, cloud or something.
Yeah. Well,
cloud graph.
Just from a security perspective of, hey, this project's got a major, you know, this open source project's got a major exploit in it. How many of our apps use that? Like, that's still not an easy question to answer.
But it's screaming for an AI solution, isn't it?
Well, you know, funnily enough, we have a solution for that. Of course we do, right? But no, we do have Dependabot, and it's one of our security features of GitHub Advanced Security. And it does scan all the dependencies in your repository and gives you report, opens a pull request, and gives you a suggested fix and gives you the information. Because managing those things is terrible. I have worked with a lot of customers that use the SBOM feature to export and know what they're consuming, how they're consuming it. And they've made it part of their development cycle to remediate now. And it's easier and less time consuming to remediate those dependencies.
Right.
And there are some great customers consuming. I mean, most customers are consuming open source. I have not spoken to one enterprise customer that does not consume any form of open source these days.
If you're not consuming open source, you're lying to yourself. Like, it's there.
Yeah.
You're just not paying attention to it. But I'm again putting the enterprise architect hat on, where we have a dependency on this library. We don't know exactly how many projects use it. Like, we're going to figure out a way to fix this and then want to propagate it across all of them. Like, I need that macroscopic view. Right? I've hung out with enough of these folks to know they got 1,000 apps. And they're like, okay, give me the landscape. How many of these have this dependency, and how are they different? Can we roll them across all of them quickly? We don't have to light each team up. You know, half those apps have no team anymore.
Yeah, very true. Very true.
You know, how do we rehabilitate all that? So I'm hoping that there is that higher level view. Like, I look at Dependabot on a project by project basis, and it does a good job.
From the enterprise management side, there's a way to export the SBOM out from the organization side. So if you have it managed at your organizational level, you can pull that SBOM out and get that reporting out if you want.
Yeah.
And actually, another good way to do it at the organizational level is export it out to a dashboard, which you can get within GitHub, but I have a lot of people doing it through Power BI. So if you have good data skills, there you go.
All right. So you just export it out, do your own analysis.
Yeah. Yeah. If you want to.
Yeah, no, it's a solution, and then it's.
But we do have some dashboards. We do have some dashboards. Yeah,
but then it's to put. You, of course, you'd know if you had a high dependency in this, because every project would light up with Dependabot at once.
Exactly, it's like a Christmas tree. It's literally red, yellow, green.
Yeah, big explosion of red all over the place.
Exactly, exactly. Well, at least it's Christmas themed.
Although often with those, it has a remediation already.
It does. They have a remediation. They give you the pull request.
You literally just have to accept the PR and. Let the builds run.
And hope nothing breaks.
But I, you know, again, as at a senior level, when this came down, I would want to lock everything. Try one. Like, there's another way. If this remediation fails, we just broke 100 apps, right? I would rather be vulnerable with 99 of them while we're trying to fix one. And when we got it fixed, then fix the rest.
Yes, which you can do. You can granularize that.
There's another problem that is maybe a little harder to detect, and that is, if you're using a tool or something that works and it compiles, but then there's an exploit posted in a CVE against it, you know, and you might not know that just looking at it, but that means that needs to be updated. So, you know, getting current versions of things is a constant whack-a-mole, right? Yeah,
it is.
And so does the Dependabot sort of look at those? Does it look for CVEs against?
Yes. So it pulls out the latest CVE updates. And then if there's an exploit that, you know, we work with security experts across the globe, they can also report them in to us. But the updates are pretty good, pretty well up to date. I've not seen very many missed, to be honest with you. It's been a really solid product. It's been it picks up a lot of stuff that I didn't even know existed. I even in like one of my top demo repositories, really simple code. It must have 12, 13 dependencies.
Is it a WordPress plugin by any chance?
This week.
WordPress plugins seem to
I'll find out.
be attacked the most from just bad developers.
Well, you know, WordPress is the Internet Explorer of this age, right? Like, it's the most hacked thing because it's used in so many places.
It's the plugins that are the problem. The WordPress itself is pretty good, but
pretty robust.
But people write these plugins for stupid stuff, and then they just don't understand security, and they leave holes.
Well, they think they're living in a happy little community, and then that happy little community gets invaded by black hats, and it's not so happy anymore. I still want to get back to this contribution side of things, because I think these tools would be awesome. Like, if I could keep track of the pull requests that my team had made into those open source libraries. So it's, you know, part of our overall corporate giving structure is, hey, we allocate a day a month for you to contribute to these open source projects on our dime, right? We'll pay you, keep working, but, you know, automating all that capability to go, one of the ways we contributed is we dev resources onto those projects too, as well as hopefully some cash for the other, for the those maintainers that, that often don't get a lot of love.
There's money involved in this? Hold on. I'm going to go change it right now.
Not that much money. Goodness knows.
No, I think, you know, it's something that I don't, I'll be honest. I work with enterprise licensing so much. I'm pretty sure we open up Dependabot for open source projects.
Right.
And under the advanced security piece for public repositories. I'm 99.9% sure of that. However, someone can correct me if I'm wrong.
Sure.
But we wanted to help the open source community a lot with that and give them that credibility. But yeah, I think it's the private repositories where it's a paid for option. I don't touch money. That's really like the summary of my job.
You're better off. Yeah. It's a whole other conversation to have, and one we can't have today.
Oh, shucks.
So what's next for you? What's in your inbox? Yeah, we're keeping you up, sleeping. Aren't we?
Nice. Christmas holidays are upon us. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I actually, it's content development right now. I'm home for a little bit. It's getting content out. We have a lot of people, and you know, we've talked about it today. All the Copilot features, all the enterprise features, people just are not aware of. And to us, it, you know, when you're doing it day in, day out, it seems like we're quite transparent with these features, but the reality is we don't have enough repeating content. So you guys were talking about all the social platforms earlier. So it's a lot of litmus testing with Instagram, TikTok, and Blue Sky now, and LinkedIn. And for me, it's going to be some content creation on how to use this stuff. And then, I don't know, we'll see what happens in 2025. I'm just, you know, I'm just enjoying being in one country for a few weeks.
Right. Weird.
Yeah, right.
Is there where do you go scuba diving in the UK?
Well, it depends. Either I go up to Scotland or I go down to the south coast or the northeast right now.
That's still all dry suit, right? That water's cold.
Oh, I don't dive in anything but a dry suit. It's cold. I think water temperature a few weeks ago in the UK was like 7 degrees in one of the quarries I was in.
Wow. Ouch.
Yeah. Well, it's spring fed, so it's always cold at the bottom.
Yeah.
So
I'm living by the ocean here. This is the ocean I grew up near, and it's 10 degrees pretty much all year round. You have a few minutes before you start to lose coordination.
Coldest water I ever felt was the St. Lawrence River, and it was summertime.
That's cold,
man. And I waded out into the St. Lawrence. After about 10 seconds, my bones froze.
Yeah.
That's basically what I thought was happening. Yeah. All right.
Yeah. Glacial I've been in 4 degree water, which is 38, 39, 40 degrees Fahrenheit. And that is, soul crushing. Soul crushing.
All right, April. I'm sure there's a lot more we could talk about, but will you come back when you have more to say?
I will absolutely come back for you guys.
Well, thank you again. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you next time on .NET Rocks.
.NET Rocks is brought to you by Franklin's Net and produced by Plop Studios, a full-service audio, video, and post-production facility located physically in New London, Connecticut, and of course in the cloud. Online at pwop.com. Visit our website at dotnetrocks.com for RSS feeds, downloads, mobile apps, comments, and access to the full archives going back to show number one, recorded in September 2002. And make sure you check out our sponsors. They keep us in business. Now go write some code. See you next time.
Does your heart long to wander? to discover the deep secrets of coral reefs, explore the wonders of the California coast, and island hop from the Galapagos to Madagascar. Feed your wild heart. Travel the world right here in San Francisco at the California Academy of Sciences. Get tickets at calacademy.org. See penguin feedings, puppet shows, and other live programs daily at the Academy.
Make the holidays stress-free for pets with PetMeds, the modern trusted platform for pet health. They have top RX brands, calming chews, and essentials to keep pets comfortable through holiday festivities. Plus, PetMeds has so many great stocking stuffers for pet lovers, and every order comes with a surprise treat for furry family members. Visit PetMeds.com and use promo code PODCAST for 40% off. PetMeds, care you trust to keep pets happy and healthy all season long.